Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we're back again this week with part two of the analysis from the spring game bonanza we were treated to this past weekend. This time, we're going to take the microscope to some G5 teams who have held their spring finales, and hopefully, we'll be able to unearth some CFF gems hidden in these smaller schools. With all of that and more, we got it coming to you right after this.
Chinty go, breaks a tackle, he's 10, he's touchdown!
Cook's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton passed the defense, touchdown Luther Burton!
Milroe gonna run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milroe, goodbye, touchdown Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com and subscribe there to any of our illustrious tiers. We've got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devi, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether it's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty. And the handsome fellow to my right today is Mr. Colin Decker at C2C Decker on Twitter. Colin, it has been a while, but how are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It has been a while since I've been on here. And honestly, you know, what better episode for me to come on than to talk G5 spring games? I know you had Kay on for Power 5, and he's much more surface level, so I'm very glad that, you know, you brought on the better guest for the G5.
Yes, definitely bringing in the reserves today. Nah, Colin's great. He's been doing an incredible job with Campus Life, him and Austin over there. You know what's funny? I think that Campus Life and Chasing the Natty started a week apart.
Roughly.
I think if you go back all the way back to, I think it was, what, March of 2021? I think you guys started like 1 week before I did.
Yeah. We started we started in like February. I don't remember when it was, but it was right around that same time.
Yeah, definitely a booming point for the college fantasy game in general, both the C2C and CFF during that time, I guess. So, but yeah, like you said, Colin, we're here. We're ready for part two of the spring game bonanzas. We're going to focus on some G5 teams. A little bit harder to find some information on some of these guys because, you know, they are not on TV nearly as much. But honestly, shout out to a lot of the beat reporters. They've done a really good job in terms of actually getting us coverage for these spring games. We'll actually touch on a MAC team here today, even though most of their beat reporters have just like given up for the most part. But there's some information out there. Again, we'll be traveling all over the place, Georgia State, FIU, Temple, USF, UTSA, Texas State, Florida Atlantic, East Carolina, a lot of teams really that we haven't been able to cover a ton so far this year. So I'm excited to get into it. I'm pretty much ready to go if you are, Colin.
Let's do it.
All right. I'll hop on right over to it. One quick little announcement I will throw out there. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, that means the newest episode of the Defending the Natty podcast is out. That is our CFF Dynasty spinoff show with myself and Nate Marquise. This month, we are taking a look at the 2024 freshmen, talking about some instant impact guys, some stashes, some fades, getting you pretty much ready to go for your CFF Dynasty leagues. Or if you're in a C2C league, you are listening to this for potential guys who will be great college fantasy ads for your roster. So that's my little announcement. Colin, you're one of the founders here at campusofkent.com. Any fun little announcements that we can make regarding the Campus of Kent website?
Nothing too crazy. We have the rookie guide that just released last week. That's our first one there. got 3 years of write-ups on players, so because we've been following these guys for so long, so we thought may as well put together a rookie guide. We got the Devy guide coming out on May 1st, and we are nearing the release of the 2024 C2C Winning Edge team profiles. Targeting early May for this one, so maybe like a week or so after the Devy guide, that should drop too. So we got a lot of great info coming for you real soon.
Probably more importantly, a week or two after the spring transfer portal window closes.
Yes.
That's probably what we're
Yes.
really going to be looking at. Which, speaking of which, those of you listening here on Wednesday probably are going to start wondering, hey, when are we going to talk about Damian Martinez? When are we going to talk about the Andrew Pauls of the world entering the portal? We will get to all of that next week. Next week's show will be solely focused on those transfer portals. Maybe a little bit, a couple of extra spring games sprinkled in here and there, but definitely. We'll get to all that next week, and hopefully, with how fast some of these transfers go, we'll already have some landing spots ready to go for some of these guys. So, plenty to talk about with that next week. But for right now, let's go talk about some of these G5 teams, and I guess we'll start with the one who was the earliest of the bunch here. That would be Georgia State. The Panthers had their spring game on Friday, compared to everybody else who had their game on Saturday. Not really a ton to take away from here. Outside of the fact that I am pretty worried about this offense going into the next year, there was only two offensive touchdowns scored in this game. I believe the final score was 17 to 14. And you might be wondering, like, oh, two offensive touchdowns. The final score was 17 to 14. How did that happen? Well, there were two pick sixes in this game, including one by Zach Gibson, the potential starting QB here for the Panthers. So, yeah, this offense could be in a ton of trouble. They lost a lot from last year. Obviously, they lose their head coach, Sean Elliott. Del McKee's coming in, trying to do his best to kind of put some patchwork stuff here together. But right now, I think it's going to be a year two thing for right now. He's trying to implement a pro-style offense, which is, what's the opposite of music to our ears, Colin? Like pro-style is like when you hear somebody saying like, oh, it's
Nails on the
pro-style.
chalkboard.
Exactly. That's nails on the chalkboard for us in the CFF community, because usually that means spreading things around, more likely some more a more committee approach at running back, a slower paced offense. That's not what we like to hear, especially given the fact that we've seen some great stuff out of Georgia State the last couple of years. But again, there's still some names to be filed away here. A lot of these guys going super late in your drafts. For those of you who've been drafting Freddie Brock, definitely some good news in the fact that he was named as a captain for this spring game, so clearly the coaching staff likes what they see there. And then the other potential name to file away, again, over the last couple of years, Georgia State has produced some good wide receivers for CFF. Again, we'll see if that stays with Dick Cheney and Del McGee running the offense. But a potential name to file away is Josias Creedle. Creedle, I can't remember how to pronounce that properly. But for me, he checked off a couple of boxes here. One, like Freddie Brock, he was named as one of the team captains for this game, specifically for the starters team. Scored the only receiving touchdown in the game on the opening drive, so clearly they're going to him pretty early on. And then you guys know me, I like guys who are available to the media afterwards for these kind of things, and he was absolutely available, one of the first guys that a lot of the media members were able to speak to. So, Colin, enough of my spiel here on the Georgia State. What do you kind of take away from all this?
Yeah, I kind of echo what you were saying at the beginning there, where I'm not sure how good this team is going to be overall. I mean, we saw them kind of fall apart down the stretch at the end of the year last year, and that was with I don't even know how many years he'd been there, Darren Granger, a quarterback who was a veteran,
Yep.
and we don't really know. I mean, Zach Gibson's presumably going to be the starter there, but he doesn't have a ton of starting experience. And their offensive line, they only bring back one of their starters, and it wasn't a great offensive line last year. So I don't know how good this team is going to be overall, which worries me a little bit for Freddie Brock. But I like the highlight there of Josias Creedle. I mean, he's the second, they lose their top three wide receivers, and he's one of two wide receivers with over 100 routes run that they bring back. So it's him and Kadarius Thompson. But Creedle being team captain, made available to the media, sounds like he might be the guy in that receiving game. And If this team's as bad as we think they're going to be, maybe there's going to be some garbage time volume. So I like that shout.
I think that's an excellent point. And in addition, when you have a guy like Zach Gibson, I kind of brought this up. I forget where I brought this up, whether it was the last episode or maybe it was just in the CFF Slack one day, where there is kind of a fun irony in when you have a bad quarterback, they are more likely to kind of get tunnel vision and focus in on their main guy, right? If you got a good quarterback who's well equipped to the system, he's likely to throw it all around the field because he's able to read the full field. Versus got an inexperienced guy, he's going to start looking for a safety blanket. Maybe Creedle is that guy here. Again, I know Creedle for a fact's going off super late and actually not going in drafts at all. Freddie Brock is going pretty late, RB80. Looking at the right after the 20th round, he's definitely dropped since the start of the season. I think people really got scared off by the change from Sean Elliott there. But who knows? I think they're, again, Creedle obviously not going drafted at all, but Brock's probably right where I would be okay with drafting him for the most part. Because that's, again, RB80, that's your, ninth, 10th running back off the board. I don't think I did the math right correctly there. No, like seventh, eighth
It's
running
like,
back.
yeah.
Seventh, eighth running back off the board, so I'm kind of cool with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, with the dart throw at the end there either. And if you want to take a dart throw on Creedle too, I think that as a last round pick in a best ball, you could probably do a lot worse. I mean, we're in a couple of best balls now, so maybe I'll snag a guy at the end here. Maybe I'll snag Creedle.
We'll see. All right, let's move on here. Go from the Peach State down to the Sunshine State. Let's go to Florida International. This seems kind of a mess last year, but really kind of goes back to that point, right? Where I was talking about, like, when you have an inexperienced, slightly bad quarterback, you focus in on one guy. That's where Chris Mitchell was able to do some wonders last year. I believe he finished in, where did he finish? Yeah, top 24 wide receivers on the year. We've seen Florida International with this coaching staff produce wide receivers before. So there is definitely some relevance here to look at for this team moving forward. In the spring game, they only had two quarters of action. So not too much that you can really glean from just two quarters. But again, the beat reporters did a pretty good job here. The lone passing touchdown on the day was from Keon Jenkins. He threw to Dean Patterson, who by all accounts seems to be or is expected to be the top target earner for the wide receivers this year. The way they're talking about him doesn't really strike me as a, like, oh, he'll be a clear alpha, more like a if I had to bet today on who has the most targets by the end of the year, he's probably the guy. So again, given the system or given what we've seen out of the system in the past, I'm okay with throwing some darts at Dean Patterson. The more interesting name, I would say, in terms of receiving options here is tight end Rocky Beers, who
All-time name team.
all-time name team. I agree. But also, in addition to that, we see, as I mentioned before with FIU, this system's produced us some good tight ends as well. Again, Revaldo Fairweather, Josh Meehan was on a roll at times last year before he was injured. He's still recovering from that injury, and it sounds like Rocky Beers is kind of taking that step up. According to the beat reporters here, Keon Jenkins' top target on the evening was tight end Rocky Beers. Beers should be implemented offense more this season, especially with how his usage rate went up towards the end of the 2023 seasons. And then again, they went on to say, like, along with Beers, Jenkins went to what should be his number one wide receiver in Dean Patterson, connecting for a touchdown on the day. So this kind of sets up nicely for CFF purposes. You got Keon Jenkins, a dual threat quarterback, throwing to what looks like two main guys in Beers and Patterson. The volume's probably not going to be there. So again, it's not like you're looking at a beautiful situation like at Washington last year where you have a ton of volume and you're throwing to like two or three guys. But both Beers and Patterson basically go free in drafts here. What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, I think this team was kind of rough last year, but they bring a lot back. They're 51st in overall returning production. They bring back Keon Jenkins, who was a true freshman starting quarterback last year. He's got another year under his belt. He was, had a couple of nice games and kind of went through a dip in the middle there. Maybe he can, take a nice sophomore step forward. But I think Rocky Beers is a great shout there. I mean, FIU last year had Chris Mitchell, who over 100 tar he had 100 targets, 1100 yards. Somebody is going to catch a good amount of passes in this offense. Again, even if just because there's some garbage time volume, because it's not a great team. And Rocky Beers is the third on the team in returning targets last year. After Miamen went down, like you said, he kind of picked it up down the stretch. And I think as a tight end, we're always looking for some sort of production, some dart throws late. I think you could do a lot worse than Rocky Beers.
I definitely
And
agree.
name,
Well,
the
yeah,
name.
it's also just great to have it here. You know what's funny? I actually had somebody in one of my leagues last year who drafted Rocky Beers because of his name, and now he's actually becoming like a CFF asset. Which, believe it or not, not the first time that that's happened. Because God, what was it, 2018 season? I believe I had a friend who drafted Chuba Hubbard because he thought
There you
his name
go.
was Chubba Hubbard back then. And so he was like, oh, I got to go with Chuba Hubbard here. And well,
Worked out.
the rest was history from there. By the way, Colin, you're on the clock in our best ball. And also, PJ, if you're listening, I don't like you.
Ooh. All
Don't
right.
like you right now.
I gotta take a look here.
But
Maybe
anyway,
I'll.
I'll go ahead and move on to the next team here. And we'll go to Temple. The Temple. Oh my God, I forgot what Temple's mascot
Owls.
is. Owls.
Hoot
They are.
hoot.
Yep. Hoot hoot. You're right. I'm like, I forget what their mascot is. Yeah. The Temple.
Outside of Philly, I had a couple friends who went there, so I'm very familiar with Temple.
Did you ever go to any other football games?
I did not. Temple is in a very rough area of Philly.
Really?
Yeah, do not recommend wandering around the streets in that area. I mean, on while you're on campus, you're okay, but if you go even a block off campus, it's not the best of areas.
Oh, that's good to know if my future kids ever want to go to Temple. So, anyway, I'll talk about the spring game here. Again, not really a ton to take away, and you're like, it's Temple, right? There hasn't been a ton of CFF production to really come out of here, even though we've seen some guys get a pretty high target share. It still doesn't ever really translate to a weekly starter for CFF, even EJ Warner, who was by far the best quarterback that this team's had in a long, long time. Just the offense wasn't able to produce like we really wanted to here. But in case you are interested, quarterback, it seems like Forrest Brock is leading the way among quarterbacks. He had 19 throws in this game, 102 yards, and a touchdown. So, yikes, a little bit there. One name that might slightly be interesting is true sophomore Jaquez Smith, who was a true freshman running back last year who led the team, kind of took over that running back room. He finished the day with 8 carries for 54 yards. There's a potential that, again, even though their rushing attack was pretty awful last year, that Smith, with another year under his belt, without EJ Warner there to kind of bail them out, maybe they do focus a little bit more on getting him the ball as much as possible. So, again, a name to file away there as we start hearing more and more good things. The most interesting name, though, to me, comes in the form of Rhys Clark, who is the tight end. He led the players in receiving during the spring game. 5 catches, 87 yards, 0 touchdowns. Definitely something to note as both David Martin Robinson and Jordan Smith have graduated. They are gone. Colin, Temple, what do you think, man?
Man, I feel like a broken record here, but I promise I'm going to be more optimistic as we go down the sheet here. But I think Temple's going to be in a rough situation. I mean, I liked EJ Warner there for them last year. We'll touch on him in a little bit, but with him transferring out, he said Forrest Brock didn't look terrible statistically, but I think this is just going to be another team that really struggles. But I do like, again, the tight end call, Rhys Clark. Like I mentioned when we were talking about Rocky Beers, just kind of like dart throw tight ends. Like this year, there isn't really any top tier guy like a Brock Bowers. I mean, it's a Rondae Gadsden, and then that's really about it. Some other guys we kind of like, but you're going to have to. So Austin and I talk about this, and this is a little bit more of a C2C mindset, I think, than CFF, but like, two different mindsets with tight end. There's like going with an anchor guy you could start every week, and then a scattershot. It's going to be mostly scattershots this year. And Rhys Clark, with this spring game line, with David Martin Robinson, what he did last year, the fact that both those guys ahead of him are gone, I think Rhys Clark could be an interesting option here too.
So it's funny you say that because I disagree slightly and do think that there are a couple of anchor tight ends. They're just not quite as heavy of anchors as Brock Bowers or
True.
Michael Mayer.
True.
Because like when I don't do projections, but I had such a hard time this year with tight ends, like ranking them and everything. I had no choice, in my opinion, but to go and just kind of make some really rough projections for myself. And I actually do think, again, if you want an anchor tight end, Holden Willis, Aronde Gadsden, Dalvin Smith, Harold Fannin, Luke Lachey, Jake Bringstuhl, and somewhat of or Brent Keithy as well. Those top seven, I think, are probably solid anchor tight ends right there, and then you can scattershot the rest of it. But if you don't get any of those seven guys, like you said, Colin, you got to go with the scattershot from there. But Breece Clark, again, he's going for free right now. I don't think I've ever seen him get drafted in any of our CFF drafts so far, so.
Yeah, I didn't hear the name before you put it on the sheet and before looking into the temple here. So, I think he's very under the radar.
Alrighty, let's move on to South Florida. I don't really have much to add here. Again, it's pretty chalk for the most part. It is a low-scoring day on the day. I believe it was a final score of 10-7, which is, you're like, oh wow, that doesn't sound like an Alex Golish offense whatsoever. Well, I mean, we know they can do it, right? Like they did it last year. If it was a suffering offense last year, if they were doing this again after a bad year of offense, then maybe be a bit more worried. But we saw what they did last year. Byron Brown is back. They should be picking up right where they left off. In fact, they did say, despite the fact that it was a 10-7 score, that the tempo looked even better than last year. Now, granted, that doesn't always mean faster per se, but if you can get into a rhythm with your plays, that'll help out your offense quite a bit. Again, not really much to take away because it was a low-scoring game, not a ton of offense. I did think it was interesting to know that there's only 22 yards rushing in this game, which is either really scary for the rushing attack, which, granted, I don't think anybody's going out there and grabbing Naquan Wright or anything like that, but it is interesting to note that, again, this rushing defense was atrocious last year. And so, like, either they've taken a huge step forward, and it could be a major difference in terms of what kind of scoring we should expect out of South Florida games this year, or this rushing offense is just absolutely atrocious, and we're going to need more Byron Brown than ever before. Speaking of Byron Brown, I want to do a quick anti-shout out to the Tampa Bay Times here for them just absolutely begging for a jinx with their article where they had in their takeaways of the South Florida game. The very first one is titled "Byron Brown Still Here." How can you, in good conscience, post that article the day before the transfer portal is supposed to open up? That is, again, just begging for a jinx. Now, again, granted, it sounds like he's pretty locked in over there, but at the same time, like, you're just begging for it at that point. Colin, back to you, man. What do you think here? Anything you got?
Yeah, I promised I was going to be more optimistic, and this is where it starts. Is with USF. Look, it is kind of discouraging that they only had 22 yards of rushing, and that there wasn't quite as much offensive firepower that you in the spring game is what you would want to see. But to add a little context to that, Byron Brown was their leading rusher last year. He had most attempts, 203; most yards, 809; he had 11 touchdowns. Naquan Wright was not that far behind, but still, Byron Brown is your leading rusher. And in a spring game, you're not going to have your quarterback running all over the place,
Yeah.
So I kind of understand the context there with the lack of rushing. The USF is sixth overall in returning production. They bring back a lot of guys. They lose one offensive lineman, so they bring back 84% of the snaps there. They bring back 84% of the receiving yards. They bring 85% of the rushing yards back, 95% of the running back snaps. Like, this whole offense is coming back. And something that Nicholas Ian Allen mentioned on Campus Life a while back early in the offseason, and something I've kind of been looking for as well, is like heading into the next year, so heading into 2024 here, like, offense is the target is exactly what you're seeing with USF. Like, offenses that just have continuity. You're bringing back the same head coach and play caller in Golish. You're bringing back the quarterback in Byron Brown, who has a full year and a couple of games underneath his belt starting. You're bringing back all of his major weapons. You're bringing back all of his offensive line except for one. I think USF could be a even I think USF is one of the safest offenses to invest in terms of Byron Brown, Sean Atkins. The other pieces, the ancillary pieces, maybe we don't want as much, but I mean, it's wheels up for these guys.
Yeah, I think one note that I am remembering off the top of my head, now I did not write this down, but again, you're talking about some of those ancillary pieces. Like, they do need another wide receiver to really step up outside of Sean Atkins, and that might come in the form of Purdue transfer wide receiver Yasir, what is it? I forget his last name.
Abdur-Rahim, Rahman,
Yes,
something like
yes.
that.
That might come in there. He's apparently had a really good spring right there. So another name to maybe potentially keep an eye on there. But like you said, it's a very safe offense with how much they're bringing back. It's why Sean Atkins is going wide receiver six in CFF best balls right now, despite the fact that he finished his wide receiver 27 last year. I've had people point that out to me. They're like, why would somebody draft somebody that high when it felt like he was playing at his ceiling last year? I'm like, well, it's because literally everything's coming back to the point where he probably gets that ceiling again because of how little has truly changed. Again, the biggest thing would be another wide receiver stepping up, but again, like, they had help at times last year, right? So one last little note I'll throw out here. Again, not that I'm saying Byron Brown will transfer, but if he does, we got to be prepared for what comes next. And it looks like that Bryce Archie is the quarterback that is currently separating himself at QB2 behind Byron Brown. So if Byron Brown enters the transfer portal, we immediately know who to go after next. Let's move on. We'll keep in the American Athletic here, and we'll go to UTSA. Again, haven't had a ton of information out of their spring so far. Jeff Traylor has been very, very vague, but with the spring game, we were able to kind of confirm some things we have been hearing and also finally get a look at some of these newcomers here. I guess we'll start with the quarterback here. And that is pretty much, again, confirming what we've been hearing. Owen McCallum and Eddie Lee Marburger are pretty much neck and neck in this QB1 battle right here. Neither one has really separated himself. According to JJ Perez at 247, he would give Owen McCallum the slight edge at quarterback, but it truly is a dead heat, and we saw that in this spring game. Both of them were able to lead their teams to a touchdown drive. Again, another pretty low scoring spring game for the most part here, but the highlight player to note here is Texas Tech wide receiver transfer JJ Sparkman. We've seen a couple of UTSA or a couple of receivers come in here to UTSA. A lot of people were interested in DJ Allen coming over from TCU as a former big time recruiting name. People like David Amador. We knew that if DeCorian Clark comes back, he'll be starting. Devin McCune will be another one of those starters. It really became a question of, all right, who's that third guy? Who's that third guy now that Joshua Cephas is out of there? And it looks like JJ Sparkman's kind of putting himself in a really, really good spot here to take over that position. And what I also found interesting to note is the fact that Traylor and JJ Sparkman have a longtime relationship. Traylor recruited Sparkman back in the 2020 recruiting class. Quote from Traylor, "He's a kid I've known and recruited for a long time. We're excited. He's big. He's fast. He's a really good human being." And then earlier in the press box, Traylor had this to say about Sparkman, said, quote, "I almost said his name to you four times when you guys kept trying to bait me into talking about which of the new guys had really come on the scene. He's obviously one of those guys." So again, Sparkman was a highlight offensive player here. We'll see if that amounts to anything down the line. Devin McCune did not play in this game. He was a healthy scratch, which is a pretty good sign that, you know, they're trying to protect him. They know he's going to be a big part of their offense moving forward. DeCorian Clark obviously is still recovering. They're taking their time with him. No, they don't want to take any risk with him right now. Colin, what are your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I think I really echo what you were saying about McEwen and being the healthy scratch here. I mean, he is very clearly going to be like the guy for Texas or for UTSA this year. He's a returning target leader from last year. Had a very nice freshman season, 546 yards. Like you said, he kind of became, the number three guy. So I think currently looks like he's going off the board as the what, wide receiver, like 74, if I'm seeing this right, in CFF. March 80.
67 in April ADP, not released to the public
April.
yet, but
Okay.
I will give you the April ADP here.
There we go. So it's on the rise. It's on the rise, but I still think that's a bargain compared to what he did last year and what he's going to be stepping into the role, presumably. But I also think that JJ Sparkman is a really good shout out there as well, because we're seeing, we saw it last year with Tyree Ogle-Kellogg. There's an outside guy who can also be, productive in this offense. And Sparkman sounds like he's going to be that outside guy here. So Sparkman probably going undrafted, I would assume right now,
For sure.
could be worth a late round pick there. So
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't mind a shot by anybody, especially if you don't trust the health situation with DeCorian Clark. If DeCorian Clark comes back healthy, I've seen
right.
some people kind of hint at the fact that, oh, he might not even be a factor. No, he'll be a factor if he's out there, right? Like he almost let like among the trio of Joshua Cephas, Za'Carri Franklin, and him, Clark led the team in receiving that year. So he's clearly a talented dude. Now, again, obviously injuries can derail anybody. But right now, I would agree. McEwen's easily the biggest value here at wide receiver 67. Talking about probably the doing math off the top of my head, not always the easiest thing to do on air. Probably about the 17th round ADP wise, you see him a lot. Like you could do a lot worse at wide receiver than taking a shot on him. All right, keep it moving here. We'll go to Texas State again. Not really a ton of information on this one either, but it does kind of confirm what people have been suspecting, and that is that Jordan McLeod was the first quarterback out there, with PJ Hatter coming out with the second team. So that's definitely good to see. And people aren't drafting a guy in the third, fourth round that is in the middle of a quarterback competition. So that's definitely comforting to a lot of people. The offense was definitely a little rough starting out, a couple of three and outs, and then three straight drives ended by interceptions by the defense. So according to the articles here, the crowd was apparently very disappointed because they saw what GJ Kinney was able to do last year, and they were hoping for some fireworks here. But that's not always what you get at these spring games. Usually, I've come to have a rule with spring games. If I expect an offense to be good, they're not scoring more than 20 points in their spring game, is pretty much how it's gone for me over the last couple of years. Again, a couple of highlights: Joey Hobert scoring a touchdown. PJ Hatter ran a 70-yard rushing touchdown, which was really cool to see. But other than that, again, pretty much the main takeaway for me here was, again, we're confirming McLeod's probably the guy moving forward. Anything else, Colin?
No, I think it's pretty comfortably McLeod, like we assumed. Don't love that he struggled to start the game, but nice to see that he turned it around. He would just get in there in spring, like it was a little bit of a later transfer, so not necessarily anything to be worried about now. Maybe if you're between like it's like a tiebreaker between him and somebody else. I think seeing this performance might give you a little bit more confidence to go with McLeod if you were a little worried before.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. But he was already kind of in a tier of his own in terms among the quarterbacks. Like you had Salter, Brown, Gabriel come off the board, and then you would have McLeod come off like at the end of the second round, beginning of the third, and then you would have another quarterback come off until like the end of the fourth. Some reason, like I always found it kind of weird. But again, now that we know for a fact he's starting, probably a little bit more justified in taking him a little bit higher. I still think personally he should fall back to the rest of the group, right where that, Haynes King, Nico Iamalieva, Kyren Drones, Jalen Milroe, Garrett Green, all those guys pretty much are going. I think he belongs in that tier pretty solidly. But, I'm not all CFF drafters, so.
Yeah, I would agree with you there too. I think it's not really like my view of McLeod. It's more just like my view of the quarterback position as a whole, where that's just like such a huge cluster after like top three guys in Brown, Salter, and Gabriel, that he doesn't really stand out that much more than some of the other guys in there. So maybe, that high of an ADP, like you said, end of the second round is maybe a little rich, but in terms of just the quarterback position as a whole, I think he's fine in that group.
Alrighty, let's move on to Florida Atlantic. This is honestly the one, I'll be real, I'm probably the most excited to talk about here today, because there's a lot of surprisingly a lot of great information that came out of the spring game. Once again, shout out to the beat reporters here, especially the ones over at the Palm Beach Post here, as well as at 247.com with their coverage of the game. Really, the two big areas that people want to know with a Tom Herman offense, the quarterback competition and the wide receivers. A lot of people have been drafting Cam Fancher at the end of drafts. He's been going as a QB 82 near the end of drafts. So like pretty much right there in the last like 2 to 3 rounds. I think he might actually be the last person on the ADP list here that's actually been drafted. Nope, he's close. He's like 3 or 4 up in terms of the latest ADP you can get that's actually drafted. So, but I do think people who are kind of taking that shot there should know that he is in the middle of a pretty fierce quarterback competition with returning, not starter, but returning contributor Tyreek Starks. Obviously, Daniel Richardson transferred after the season. He was kind of expected to be that next guy. He's now at Florida Atlantic. Obviously, oh my God, what's his name? Who's the quarterback?
Wester?
Who went to Oklahoma?
Daniel Richardson?
No, not Daniel Richardson. The one who is at Texas, then he's at Nebraska.
Casey Thompson.
Oh my God. I was like CT.
So many different quarterbacks.
I can see the initials. I couldn't put it together. Yeah, Casey Thompson's now at Oklahoma, obviously. So they basically lost their two options. So they had to bring a guy in there with Fancher. But Tyreek Starks looking pretty solid here. Again, Fancher had 30 pass attempts on the day, 137 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions. 4 rushing attempts for 34 yards. He was the first quarterback out there, so it's clearly like he's the first guy they're putting out there. He probably has a little bit of edge in the quarterback competition, but Tyreek Starks, man, of the two guys, like, he looked better. He had 23 pass attempts, completed 15 of them, 192 yards, so more passing yards on less attempts, 3 touchdowns, and again, not quite as good in the rushing department, but still pretty solid. 8 rushes, 23 yards, no interceptions, a couple of sacks in there. Definitely impact things. So both these guys can run. I think Tyreek Starks is a name I'm going to file away here. I think just based on this performance and the fact that this is even close, they like brought Fancher in to be the starter, and he is able to, and Tyreek Starks has been able to keep up with him. I think it's something interesting to note there. You have any thoughts on that, Colin?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we all kind of were assuming it was going to be Fancher, but, you know, you kind of feel bad for the kid, but he sort of got run out of Marshall by the fans there. They were not very happy with Fancher. I remember reading a quote at the end of the year from Marshall's head coach saying that, you know, he kind of felt bad for the way that Fancher was treated. And, you know, we were kind of rooting for him here at FAU, but maybe he's just not very good. And Starks, you know, looked a little bit better in this game, like you highlighted, and we do want the Tom Herman quarterback. Even the shell of Casey Thompson last year had some flashes and had some moments. For so sure. Definitely a situation you want to keep in mind. I don't hate, you know, only watch listing Starks until you figure out like who is actually going to be the starter here.
Yep. Outside the quarterback room, the other place we want to know about for a Tom Herman offense is the wide receiver position, and who's going to be the next LaJonte Wester. And according to the news here, we're not getting another LaJonte Wester, but that doesn't mean there's not some value here, right? So according to the Palm Beach Post, the offense will seek to spread some targets around more this year. Like, that makes sense, right? LaJonte Wester had over 130 targets last year. Even if you just take a third of those targets away, you're still looking at a guy who can produce well for CFF for the most part. And as an offense, you don't really like relying on one guy that much. So clearly it makes sense why that's going to be a goal. Quote from the Palm Beach Post article here: in Saturday's scrimmage, Herman showed that the offense will take the quote money ball approach by recreating Wester's 9 receptions per game in the aggregate. Quote from Tom Herman himself: that's probably what you're going to see. I don't know that we're going to have a guy lead the country in catches again. The last 2 out of the 3 years I've been a head coach, we have, but that's okay. That just means we've got a lot of depth and a lot of quality depth. I think the fact that we've got 6 to 8 guys that we feel really good about is a real positive too. So I appreciate Herman being honest there and saying like, hey, like, it might be that I don't want to do it, but we might end up doing that again regardless, because look at the last couple of years. But I don't blame him for wanting to spread things around. But it's funny that he says that, and then the leading receiver in this game was Amari Hayes, a guy that barely got any run last year, but has quickly worked his way into a starting spot here. He led the way in the spring game with 8 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. So they're trying to spread the ball around, but also our leading receiver got 8 catches in the spring game. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I'm putting Amari Hayes in my wide receiver rankings. I'm not, like, shooting him way up and everything like that, but he will be a guy that, if he's available at the end of drafts, I got to take the shot on him just because of Tom Herman's system. I've even taken the shot on Marlon Johnson a few times already because I really didn't know who to really go after in that room. And I'm like, well, Marlon Johnson was a slot at Buffalo. Maybe I go after him. But no, I'm switching over here. If I'm taking a shot on FAU wide receiver, I'm going with Amari Hayes right here.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the easy call right now after seeing this spring game is going with Amari Hayes. And that's not a player that was even remotely on my radar beforehand. Marlon Johnson was, you know, like you said, kind of slot receiver, came over from Buffalo. We know we want the Tom Herman slot receiver. He can tell us that he's going to have this be in the aggregate and that he's not going to have a wide receiver lead the country in targets and receptions. And he probably won't, but actions do speak louder than words here. And he peppered Amari Hayes with targets in this one, 8 catches. And of his last 7 years as a head coach, there've only been 2 years where he's had a wide receiver finish under 16.8 fantasy points per game. It was the 2020 COVID year with Texas, which was a lame duck year for him.
Yep.
And then his first year at Texas. You know, he traditionally is a guy that we want to target their wide receiver for, like you mentioned. So even if he's not getting that like 22.7 fantasy points per game that we saw out of Western last year, then, you know, maybe it's a little closer to the 16 mark that we got in his other years as a head coach for Hayes. But honestly, Hayes is free 99 right now. If you can get 16-17 fantasy points per game out of a guy just sheerly on volume that you're getting for free, like that's how you win leagues, is what those late picks like that.
I definitely agree. And I will throw out a little bit of cold water on this, so I'm not accused of pumping and dumping by a certain Chris K here. Hayes is kind of a smaller guy. Again, 5'9", 165. So again, it's not like he's a huge target for his offenses here. And Colin, how many snaps total do you think Amari Hayes played for FAU last year? Actually, I'm going to say the last 2 years. Last 2 years, how many snaps do you think he's played?
That's a great question. So I'm using the C2C Winning Edge Returning Production database, and he's not even listed in there for 2024. So I honestly would have said zero, but it sounds like maybe there was a snap or two in here.
He played 6 snaps in punt coverage last year.
There it is.
And he played 0 in the year before, so this is his redshirt sophomore year. And apparently, again, according to the reports, he's breaking out. He's really kind of taking that next step, which is really, really nice to hear, obviously. But, you know, there's still got to throw that out there. Like, you're talking about a guy that we're thinking goes from somebody who barely played on special teams last year to now could be the number one wide receiver for FAU. Definitely a little bit of a hard sell there. That's why he should stay in near the end of drafts right now until we get a lot more confirmation here.
Pump and dump. Pump and dump. Nope. I'm all over Hayes.
I pumped and dumped in the same podcast, so I hope Kay's happy with me.
No, I mean, you definitely want to throw cold water on it. It's never a encouraging sign when a guy has 6 total special team snaps across 2 years at a school like FAU that's not, you know, a talent factory. Now, Ajonte Wester is a solid wide receiver, you know, ended up at Colorado. We'll see what he's able to do there. But I think this is something that highlights the importance of systems, which is something that you and Nate Marquise and a lot of other smart people in the CFF industry are preaching all the time, is it's so much about the systems. And I think this is a system where we know we want the number one wide receiver, and let's take a look at the spring game and use that as an indicator that Hayes should at least be getting drafted now.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to East Carolina. where really the main theme to come out of the spring game, once again, a pretty low scoring game, but just that steady drumbeat of, we don't know who the starter at quarterback is going to be, but between Jake Garcia and Caden Hauser, you are looking at a vast improvement in terms of the quality of QB play than we've seen out of East Carolina the last couple of years, which is excellent, welcome news that we have gotten. They've got a new offensive coordinator this year, which is certainly something we wanted to see, who's bringing a bit more aggressive passing attack here. They had a lot of explosive plays in the spring game, 11 passes of 10 yards or more, 6 runs of 10 plus yards. Again, it was a pretty short spring game for the most part, so those numbers in aggregates don't sound pretty great, but in terms of the rate of explosive plays they were getting, they're definitely excited about. I don't have this written down in the notes because it didn't come from the spring game, but I have been following East Carolina pretty closely as a school I got my eye on in terms of players who have some value here. It does sound like the Hauser is probably slightly in the lead right now among the two guys here, but it really is just completely neck and neck. Both of these guys, very similar to UTSA, led scoring drives. They looked good doing it. I really think that we see a return to CFF relevance, at least somewhat, for East Carolina this year. Obviously, we typically see, you know, a little lackluster year one, year two is where things really kind of kick off here. But, you know, the transfer portal, things are a lot easier for East Carolina now. Chase Sewell's coming back. He should be a big factor. There's a lot of hype for Winston Wright, who was the former wide receiver at West Virginia and Florida State. I know of at least one beat writer at hoistthecolors.com, their 247 site. He specifically said Winston Wright will lead the team in targets this year. He is willing to bet on that. And so that's a guy going for free right now. Again, we'll see if this team is able to get back to CFF relevance. Holton Ayler's just back in 2021, finishes QB 27. He was a guy that was able to be CFF relevant for multiple years there. Hopefully we see a return to greatness here for the Pirates. Colin, any thoughts here?
Yeah, I think you highlighted it with the quarterback battle. I mean, between Kattenhauser and Jake Garcia, both of those guys were, you know, pretty high 4 stars. They were both top 15 quarterbacks in their respective classes, and that's as good as you can possibly hope for East Carolina. And I think Kattenhauser is a guy that we liked, like our recruiting team liked. I know he's a Matt Bruning favorite. Like, I think he's a talented quarterback. So if he is your quarterback at a school like East Carolina, you know, I think that this is a situation to potentially target him late. You know, if we know he's going to win the job, like I probably wouldn't go after him just yet, since it seems like it's pretty heated. But I think that, you know, we've seen it from Holton Ahlers, who was pretty productive. He was a guy that if he was, you could be 4 or 5 on a roster and you had to spot start him, like you weren't upset about it. So I think he's a guy that, you know, definitely keep on your radar. Once he presumably wins the job, like he's the guy there to go after. But either way, that makes Chase Sewell very safe, given the fact that we're hearing very good things about both of these guys. Both of them have a pretty high pedigree. Whoever it ends up being, I think Chase Sewell is a pretty nice target.
Yeah, Chase Sewell is currently going as wide receiver 87. I don't hate that value. Again, he's definitely risen over the last couple of months. But again, like I would say the even better value right now is Winston Wright. Again, there's been a lot of buzz about him with the experience that he brings to this room. It's quite possible that there are potentially 2 CFF relevant wide receivers if they really do just funnel targets over and over again to Chase Sewell and Winston Wright both. But considering Wright's going later right now, I'd actually say he's the better value.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, and he has also that power 5 pedigree too. Even though he didn't really do too much at his last stops, you know, going down to a stop at like East Carolina, maybe that's the appropriate level for him. It sounds like he's really shining in spring.
Alrighty. We'll finish up with one last team that we will kind of deep dive into here. And then we got a couple of other teams that we got some quick notes on that we can run through here at the end. But we'll talk about Middle Tennessee State here. They were kind enough to provide some of the stats from this game. I do want to give a quick shout out real quick to Ethan Sowers, who wrote an excellent article at Campus of Canton just really a week before this spring game, highlighting the player that we're probably going to talk about the most here, and that is quarterback Nicholas Vatiato. He went 15 for 16 in this game, 228 yards, and a touchdown, well over 10 yards per attempt here. I fully admit, I know that Vatiato finished as a CFF relevant quarterback last year. In fact, let me see. I believe he finished as the QB 28. So very, very solid CFF finish for him last year. I did not even have him ranked to start the offseason here because I was very bearish on the Derek Mason hire. But Ethan Sowers points out in his article at campusagain.com that Middle Tennessee has picked themselves up quite the offensive coordinator, a really under the radar hire here that could really do some big things. And really, we see in the spring game with how well Vatiato was able to perform here. Now, granted, maybe some of this is the defense that he was facing, but could pick up right back where he left off last year, could be even better. Last year, again, QB 28, 22.31 points per game. Really, really safe play last year. Nine games between 20 and 30 points. Again, if you just wanted those banked in points every single week, he was a great option to have. Again, he could go even higher this year. He's currently going as QB 38, like middle of the 17th round. I didn't have him ranked before. I now have him ranked at QB 45. Colin, am I still underrating him? Are we still underrating Vatiato as a CFF option? Again, I got him QB 45, ADP has him QB 38. He finished as QB 28 last year. Where do you think he kind of falls?
I think it's the little bit of concern over the offense was definitely fair. There was some turnover there, but I think given the way that the spring game went, 15 of 16, like you highlighted, 228, looking pretty good. And he was a very safe floor play last year. So I think maybe the community is still underrating him a little bit too much, given he finished QB 28 last year. And he's kind of going off the board QB 38, like you highlighted. But at that range, typically you're feeling pretty good about your quarterbacks because he's going off the board as like a QB 3 to 4. So at that point, you're probably swinging a little bit more for upside, and he may not necessarily offer the upside you're looking for. So I get him being a little bit lower than the QB 28 where he finished. But yeah, I mean, I think still a little underrated.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking, like, so I think he's an excellent ad. Like, you're talking about, like, typically later quarterbacks, you're shooting for upside. There's a lot of quarterbacks, in my opinion, right now that, especially in best balls, are being drafted pretty highly who are pretty risky, right? Like, Shedeur Sanders, what is he like without Sean Lewis, right? He's going QB 7 right now in drafts. Haynes King, we talked about him several times on the show about his schedule and everything. He's QB 5 right now. Avery Johnson, he had a really good game, but can he do it week to week at Kansas State? Should be able to, given the system and his skill set, but you never know there. Thomas Castellanos with Bill O'Brien coming in to be his head coach. Is he really as safe of a play as QB 14? Don't really know. So if you got a bunch of those guys, I think Vatiato becomes a very interesting option to grab as your third or fourth QB there. So that's kind of how I view it. But I agree with you, that probably does kind of push him down in the aggregate and why he's going a little bit later than what he finished as last year. I think it's a very good point.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, but it's still, like you said, safe play, nine games between 20 and 30 fantasy points, and there's a lot of value in that. So,
even you know, more it's not value in a 6-point passing touchdown league.
Exactly.
So, alrighty. That's the last one we're going to do a deep dive into. Got four other group of five teams that had their spring games here. So, Colin, I'll throw it over to you, man. Pick one of these four here between Rice, Nevada, Old Dominion, Eastern Michigan, and kind of give us a quick, like, what were the main takeaways there?
I mean, I think that one of the biggest things is Rice and that quarterback situation. We were presuming it was going to be EJ Warner, the Temple transfer, and it does seem like it is going that way. And last year, I mean, JT Daniels was a solid quarterback who produced, you know, a fair number of options in the passing game with Luke McCaffrey and the tight end growing.
I think it's just, you know, Green.
So, or Green?
I think it's just Green.
I'm terrible with pronunciation on names. But either way, he produced a couple of options in that passing game. EJ Warner did something similar at Temple. I think it's a relatively lateral move, at least in terms of, you know, kind of competition level. So I don't see any reason why EJ Warner can't support some options in that passing offense again at Rice. So with him looking pretty good, looking like he's going to win that job, I think you can kind of safely go after a couple of these guys that, you know, we were a little bit higher on, or not necessarily higher, but we were interested in, like Green and Ransom Goals. I think you can go after those guys a little bit more comfortably now, even if maybe EJ Warner kind of lacks the ceiling that we would want. I just like that floor play for the passing offense.
I think it's a fair one because, again, let's look at what JT Daniels was able to do last year before he got hurt. Again, he started off the season a little rough, 9 points, but he played Texas, right? You're not going to ask too much of him there. After that, Daniels went on a really good spree here. 27 points, 26 points, 27 points the week afterwards. Then things have slowed down a little bit, 16, 20 points. Bye week, 27 points, and then 16 points, and then he gets hurt the week after. But at one point, he was in the top 30 quarterbacks about halfway through the season before, again, he got hurt. So there's definitely a path for if EJ Warner can pick up this offense pretty well, he should be a very solid CFF option. Now, I don't think he's quite there yet based on what we're hearing, right? EJ Warner in this game, 18 for 25, or excuse me, 18 for 28 for 105 yards. So you're talking about, good Lord, like, what is that?
Low A dot.
Like low,
Very
low A
low.
dot. You're talking about like almost
That's
4 yards per attempt there. Like it
yeah.
is yikes. And just based on the way the staff talks about it, like they clearly want Warner to win this job, but he hasn't quite taken that step to truly separate himself from AJ Paget, who is the returning backup from last year. Again, clearly they're giving him the benefit of the doubt, but I think he still has a ways to go, and it could affect at least the early part of the season in terms of how well Warner's able to support some of those Rice options we've been liking to draft. Like you said, Green, Landon Ransom, and then Rawson McNeil, and guys like that. So we'll see right there, but I'll move on to another team here. Who do I want to go with here? I think we'll go with Nevada. We'll go west here. So, Nevada unfortunately suffered every team's worst nightmare during spring games, and that's injuries. Sean Dollars got injured. He was their RB1 last year. He's set to be RB1 again this year. It sounds pretty serious. He was strapped to a spine board, had to be put on a stretcher and wheeled out of the game to the hospital. He was released today, which is obviously really, really good news. And they talked to the coach on the sideline saying that he was feeling in his extremities. So that's obviously, you know, when you're going out there with a spine board and a stretcher, you're thinking potential neck injury of some kind. That's obviously great to hear that he seems relatively okay, but could be out for a bit. In addition to that, last year's re leading receiver, Dalavon Campbell, was injured on the first play of the spring game. Deep ball was thrown to him, came up holding his right hamstring. He was done for the rest of the day after that. So you got two of your best offensive weapons hurt. Brandon Lewis is still your first team quarterback, which might as well be an injury in and of itself. And then there's just really a lot of talk from the coach about lack of discipline. A quote from him, the anxiety levels go up to the point of having unforced errors among his offense and defense, which is not what you want to hear at all at this point in the spring. I just think that, again, if you're looking at any kind of value in Nevada, which, again, if I look at my ADP or ADP, I don't think there's a single Nevada player who's really coming off any of these drafts. But if you are thinking like, oh, like, you know, bad team, maybe they throw a lot, stuff like here, I think this is going to be another crap show year for the Wolfpack. I wouldn't be surprised if the head coach is gone after this year. I forget his name off the top of my head, but it just doesn't seem like things are gelling at all for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, you also have to be a little bit concerned with him talking about the anxiety levels of his players going through the roof. Like, as a coach, like, it's your job to get these guys in a position to
Right.
play every single week and feel comfortable. And then not only that, but like, just as a like leader of men, like, you should be like reducing their anxiety. You know, why are these guys feeling so anxious the whole time? I feel like that's kind of like a little bit of a red flag just from like a coaching perspective. So yeah, it really wouldn't surprise me if they see another terrible year out of these guys, and you know, we see the head coach out the door.
All right, we got two teams left here, Colin. Really, I threw both of these teams at the end because there was so little to gather out of their spring games. But we got Old Dominion, Eastern Michigan. Which one do you want to talk about?
Man, I'll talk about Eastern Michigan. You know, I think that I had high hopes for Samson Evans last year, and he disappointed pretty substantially. I took him definitely earlier than I should have in some drafts. So I am going to be approaching this offense with a huge grain of salt. The rushing offense is kind of what we've looked at the last couple of years. And it was so committee heavy last year. You know, it was Evans, Jalen Jackson, Mims.
Mims came in this year. Delbert Mims.
Oh yeah, okay. Austin Smith was the quarterback, over 100 carries last year. But yes, either way, I'm probably not interested in anybody in Eastern Michigan. Like, I think the Samson Evans like productive year was probably a bit of a fluke.
Potentially. I mean, Evans, for all of the heartache he gave us last year, he eventually turned it around. He got in the two playoff weeks, week 12, week 13, he scored 26.8 and 20.2 fantasy points. So you're sitting there wondering,
that's
like,
fair.
Where was this all year?
Yeah, because you probably weren't in the playoffs if you had Evans.
Exactly. Exactly. You're like kicking yourself the whole time. I'll admit, I've drafted Delbert Mims here and there, given the fact that, again, they lose Evans. Jalen Jackson transferred out. I'm like, okay, it's a wide open running back room there. Mims showed some flashes at NC State, but again, never really took over as a guy that they trusted. So I'm like, well, maybe he can do that at Eastern Michigan. Why not? But like you said, for the most part, I'm probably avoiding this. In this game, 5 different quarterbacks took snaps, 17 different players caught a pass, 13 different players recorded a rush. So they were just letting anybody get out there and get a chance with the ball there. I think that was, one, by design, and two, I think it is a little indicative of the fact that they want to have multiple options at every position here. So I've been drafting Mims at like the very end of drafts, especially if I don't really love my running back room. I take another shot there, but otherwise, nothing really I like coming out of this offense. One other note I did notice was that there were 2 long runs in this game, not by anybody that you can be excited about, but one one by Deion Brown, one of their backup running backs, and the other one was a true freshman quarterback, Jay Seckley, who could be interesting in the future, potentially, given the fact that he ripped off a 60-yard run in this game. But given that fact that they were getting beat in the run game greatly at multiple levels between the starters and the backups and everything like that, I think it could be indicative of future CFF mismatch if you're looking for some of your, like, you know, future MAC matchups there. But, you know, way too early to tell on that kind of stuff. Last thing we'll touch on here, Old Dominion. I specifically reached out to Justice, one of our members here at, or not one of our members, one of our staff members here at Campus of Canton, our IDP expert and resident Old Dominion expert, because this man probably knows more about Old Dominion than most of the Old Dominion beat reporters.
Yeah. Shout out G5 Hive.
I know. Absolutely. Shout out G5 Hive. By the way, go check out their most recent Worker Bee series with the UAB beat reporter from Alabama.com.
That was a good one.
Absolutely incredible stuff in there. I'm not going to spoil any. I'm not going to spoil anything for you guys, but like, great, great stuff in that pod here today. And I reach out to Justice. I'm like, what is there to take away here? Because I initially thought about Tariq Sims, who ripped off a couple of big runs in this game. You know, they lose Callaway, they lose Wicks from last year. And I'm like, okay, maybe there's something interesting here with Tariq Sims. And he said, don't worry about nothing. The glorified scrimmage. Like, Grant Wilson's your starter, but there's not really that much to be excited about here. Tariq Sims was RB3 at best last year. He's not going to be a guy that they're going to rely on this year. He said most likely the running back room will be a full committee. And given how much that Old Dominion lost in the portal this offseason, like, I'm kind of inclined to agree. Like, we were kind of excited about the offense changing last year with the offensive coordinator they were able to bring up from the FCS, but like, the Monarchs really just cannot hold on to any of the talent that they have. It's making it really difficult for them to build any kind of momentum year to year. I'm not touching any Old Dominion players right now.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I mean, we, like you said, we had a lot of hope for the new offensive coordinator they were bringing in from the FCS level. He had a lot of success. I'm pretty sure it was at Fordham.
Yes.
It was a very productive FCS offense. We have yet to see that transfer. There's nobody on this team that you're really excited about. The only thing I will say is that they are returning three offensive line starters, and then two other players who, played a handful of snaps. One played over 100 snaps. So there's at least going to be some continuity on that front. And maybe that'll help open things up for somebody else, but I would definitely need to see it for several weeks before I would even consider investing in anybody in this offense.
I agree. Again, like I thought about guys like Isaiah Page in the past. Like he looked pretty solid in the bowl game, but like for the most part, I'm like, you know what? It's not worth it. There's other offenses I'd rather take a shot on. This is a perfect watch list candidate. A guy pops off week one. I wouldn't even go after them in the waiver wire. If you have like 20 or less spots on your roster, I still wouldn't even go after them and be like, okay, let's just see how this goes over the next couple of weeks. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Who knows? Alrighty. That pretty much brings us to the end of our show. Colin, really appreciate you hopping on, man. And gotta get you on here more often. It's always a blast having you on here. Again, you've mentioned at the start of the show some of the stuff we're working on with Campus of Canton, with the Devi guide, the rookie guide, and everything like that. Absolutely, people, if they don't already for some reason, should go onto the Campus of Canton Podcast Network and check out yours and Austin's show with the Campus Life podcast. It really, again, you guys are focused on C2C. And like, you know, how guys develop for the NFL and everything like that as well. But like, you do talk a lot of stuff that is CFF relevant because as a C2C podcast, you care both about the NFL future of guys and how they're going to perform coming into the year. Now, you guys will sit there and say all the time, like, oh, we're not CFF experts. We're not CFF experts. But you guys have been doing this for 3 years now. You guys have talked to us enough and everything over at the CFF team. You guys know what to look for. You guys are pretty smart about stuff. And you guys find your own great information. So if people don't do that already, absolutely go check out Campus Life on the Campus Again Podcast Network. Is there anything else I'm missing here, Colin?
No, not really. I mean, I appreciate you saying, giving us some credit as CFF guys, because we, Austin and I are routinely, as we say on there, not CFF experts. We lean a lot on you guys, and the community at large. I mean, there's a lot of other great,
For
communities and
sure.
podcasts out there as well, but we really lean on you guys for our, CFF knowledge. But I will say that Austin and I, amongst people in the C2C community, do tend to lean heavier into the CFF production. We do try to talk a little bit about that on there. We do our best. Sometimes as Chris Kay says, I'm really grasping at straws, like he said with my Tez Johnson comments the other week. But we do try to give as much input there as we can. The only thing, other thing I'll plug again is the C2C Winning Edge team profiles dropping in early May. Very excited for those. Those are going to have some depth chart information. It's going to have full schedule analysis. You're going to have win projection totals. Like, this is going to be, whether you're into betting, whether you're into CFF, whether you're just a diehard college football fan, like, this is going to be something you're going to want to get.
Absolutely. And Nick Ian Allen puts a ton of work into that every year. I know he's got himself a little squad, including yourself, Colin, who's helping
I'm
him
trying.
put it together this year. You and Jarek have been great helps to him. It's probably one of the better things we put out on our website, and it's worth every penny. It's basically a big old cheat sheet in terms of a conglomeration of all the different research we've been doing over really the just since the off season started. And like, if you're somebody who has had trouble keeping up with literally everything that's gone on this off season, you've taken a break, coming back in, you're like, all right, where do I even start? That's going to be like the perfect starting place for you in terms of being able to break each team down. So very excited about that. With that, we've come to the end of our show though. I want to thank you all for listening. If you have not already, go ahead and leave a like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, though, I want you to follow the show and leave a five-star review where you can. I gave you guys a challenge last week to add some five-star reviews, and y'all did on the Spotify side of things. Great job. But I would love some written five-star reviews over on the Apple Podcast side of things. Appreciate those greatly. Make sure you guys, of course, check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network. As I mentioned earlier, shows like The Campus Life, everything like that. It got stuff ranging on anything related to the college fantasy game, whether it be Devi, Campus Canton, freshmen, all of the stuff that you need. We'll see you guys back here next Monday, back on a regular schedule next week, where we are going to break down the inevitable chaos that's going to come with the spring portal window opening up. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.